Today on Seculo, you might not even believe this, but President Biden and the White House have launched an Islamophobia task force as anti-Semitism plagues the U.S. and radical Muslims are killing Jews in Israel.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
All right, welcome to Seculo. We've got a lot to talk about today. There was some interesting information released of all timing. I mean, the timing always off at this White House. When you hear Vice President Harris is going to make an address with a teleprompter, it's kind of shocking. And you see these tweets and you're like, are they living in the same universe we are? Are they living in a parallel world? I mean, you even try to figure out an explanation for it. Like maybe there's a reason they did this at this time. And then you're like, no, I can't think of any reason. So I want to start the show off with exactly what I said in the tease. If you missed the tease, President Biden and the White House announced yesterday the launching of an Islamophobia task force as anti-Semitism against Jews, based off their own FBI director, Christopher Wray, is what is plaguing the U.S. so dangerously right now. 2.4 million Jews in America, 60% of the religious hate crimes are against Jews, not Muslims. But take a listen to Kamala Harris announcing this new task force.
And so today, I am proud to announce the Biden-Harris administration will develop our nation's first national strategy to counter Islamophobia. This strategy will be a comprehensive and detailed plan to protect Muslims and those perceived to be Muslim from hate, bigotry, and violence, and to address the concern that some government policies may discriminate against Muslims. For example, the so-called Muslim ban, which President Biden revoked on our first day in office.
All right, folks, you know, they call it the Muslim ban, but it didn't ban all Muslims, of course, from coming to America or getting visas. It was countries that were not able to vet people when they were putting them on planes to America, or basically failed states that had no ability to know who was going on a plane. The original travel ban list only lasted for 90 days. It was Iran, surprising. I mean, I think that's still in place. I don't think you just fly over here from Iran unless you're an official going to a UN meeting. Iraq, where we're engaged still in a war. Libya, which was a totally failed state controlled by ISIS. Somalia, I remember what happened, of course, in Benghazi. Somalia, a terrorist-run state. Sudan, up until now, the overthrow of Bashir, and now still in a state of kind of who controls what. The military has taken over. But at that time, it was Omar Bashir, an international war criminal wanted by the International Criminal Court. Syria, who was using chemical weapons against its own people, and Yemen, who was shooting rockets into our ally, Saudi Arabia. There's a lot more Muslims around the world in Asia and the Middle East that weren't on that ban list, including some of the largest Muslim countries in the world, like Indonesia and Pakistan and India. Those Muslims weren't barred. This wasn't a Muslim ban. It was a terror ban.
Well, let me tell you what the worst part of this is. Rising anti-Semitism to heights we haven't seen since Germany 1930 are happening in the United States of America. And on that very day when they arrest the Cornell student who was threatening the Jewish students, on that very day, the White House decides to come out with a task force on Islamophobia. Now, think about this. Jews are being, and Israelis are being slaughtered in their own country. Anti-Semitism, Christopher Wray said, the highest it's ever been, and Islamophobia is what's on the mind of the Biden White House. This is the reason why we need you to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. We are in our faith and freedom drive, and we're in a moment in history that none of us would have ever thought we'd see, but here we are. We're witnessing horrible atrocities internationally and even on our own country, especially on college campuses. We're sending demand letters to the East European Union, congressional leaders, the UN Security Council. We are representing students that are being harassed because they're Jewish or Christian students who are pro-Zionist. All of this happens because of your support for the ACLJ. Support our work and our faith and freedom drive. Any amount you donate, we get a match. And if you can make that a recurring gift, you become an ACLJ champion.
All right, welcome back to Secul. We are always honored to be joined by our very good friend of the ACLJ and of the Seculos, Senator Bill Hagerty of Tennessee, who had an opportunity to question Secretary Blinken and Samantha Power about this money that is an aid that is still planned on going to Hamas, even after the atrocities of October 7th in Israel and the ongoing atrocities and the kidnapped hostages that have not been released, including Americans. And by the way, that number keeps going up, it seems. We find out there are more hostages. So many people have seen the horrendous images of what happened and how these Hamas terrorists really took over like ISIS, or even worse, committing crimes against children, women, men, and the elderly. And Senator Hagerty took it right to Secretary Blinken. And Senator Hagerty, let me ask you this, and thank you for joining us such a busy time in the U.S. and the world. Senator Hagerty, when you went to Blinken, what did he say? It's not like American accountants are on the ground tracking what Hamas is going to do with this aid, or who's going to get it, and whether actual people in need will ever get it.
Well, they want to come to us and ask for billions of dollars in, quote, U.S. foreign assistance to go into the Gaza Strip. The Gaza Strip is controlled by Hamas. I confronted Secretary Blinken with emails that we discovered, internal emails from the State Department. We received these via Freedom of Information Act request. I entered those into the record, and I recited to him exactly what they said. There is a high risk that those funds will be able to go to the benefit of Hamas. Hamas is the terrorist organization that just launched a murderous attack on the Israelis and killed over 1,400 people. And included in that number were, some 36 Americans that they murdered. So when I asked Secretary Blinken if he could assure me that the aid dollars that the United States has already sent into Gaza weren't involved in supporting Hamas's attack on October the 7th, he couldn't assure me of that. He doesn't know, clearly. I asked him point blank three times. It kept coming back to the question as he kept trying to evade it. He could not answer me that American dollars aren't basically funding both sides of this war. That's the last place we want to see American taxpayer dollars spent. I don't want to see a dime of American taxpayer dollars going to Hamas so that they can use that again in turn to kill more Israeli citizens and include Americans in that as well.
Senator, one of the things I'm concerned about is that the administration appears to be totally tone deaf. They announced yesterday that they're starting a task force on Islamophobia. That was the same day that Christopher Wray testified before Congress saying that the 60% of the hate crimes that are religiously motivated are against Jews. 60%. And they only represent 2.6% of the population. And the response from the White House on that is, let's have a task force on Islamophobia. It appears they're totally tone deaf.
Yeah, I think, it's been called out in the media. I did an interview yesterday with Larry Kudlow. He accurately coined it. He basically said what they're doing, they meaning the Biden White House, are pandering to the far left extreme radicals in their own party. These are the ones that are doing the pro-Palestinian, rallies in the cities and on our college campuses. These are the people that are, basically aligning themselves, with Nazism. And they are so desperate to maintain this, quote, broad coalition of fringe groups and activist groups that have, certainly radical views based on, the where most of America is. But they're willing to do anything to pander to them, to keep them in the boat, so to speak, so that in, critical congressional districts like in Michigan, they're able to continue to use these people. And they're going to the White House. These groups are going to the White House. Pressure groups are going to the White House saying, look, we helped you, Joe Biden. We went door to door campaigning for you, Joe Biden, back in 2020 to help you win that election. And you're going to lose us if you don't start catering to us. And that's where you see, Kamala Harris come out with this pandering and creating these working groups and all this sort of thing. They will not even say who's at the root of all of this. That's Iran. It's very difficult to get the White House to even acknowledge Iran's role in all of this. And if you saw what happened, with Hamas, that was Iranian funding, that's Iranian technology, that's Iranian know-how that was deployed to murder over 1,400 Jews.
And we weren't planning on it. We were together, Senator Hagerty, when this attack occurred. And it was shocking, the brutality we kept seeing on our phones, the reactions that were being made, and just we had never seen Hamas take it to the level of ISIS or maybe even surpassing ISIS. And then, we see Christopher Wray testify very openly and honestly about the issues Jews are facing right here in the United States, mm-hmm. that this group of just 2.4 million people face 60% of the religious hate crimes. And the next day, the vice president is announcing this council on Islamophobia. I think that, one, Americans, even after 9/11 showed, we don't have a major problem with Islamophobia. There are radical extremists on Americans who have bad views on people, but most Americans are good people and respect you if you respect them. Why, again, is it purely politics that they announced this because they don't want to lose the votes from the squad?
Jordan, I think you've hit the nail on the head. That's all I can imagine it is. It's politics. It's responding to pressure groups in the extreme radical left that are pushing this. You know, this is un-American, what they're talking about. We have Jewish citizens that are fearful of their lives here in America. Even one of my own colleagues, you know, suffered a severe threat, Jackie Rosen. And we've got to bring this under control instead of pandering. We need to be standing strong with Israel and with our Jewish neighbors right here in America. It's totally unacceptable when you have these threatening protests taking place in our cities and on our college campuses that are making, you know, young Jewish people, elderly Jewish people, anybody of that faith, deeply concerned. And when Christopher Wray comes out, as you aptly mentioned, and highlights the fact that the vast majority of these hate crimes in America taking place in American soil, and I don't condone any hate crime. You know that. We're against that
right.
at every level. But the disproportionate impact of that on our Jewish citizens and the fact that it's gone up over 400% since October the 7th is alarming. And we need to be doing something about that.
Senator, there is a movement in the House of Representatives, passing the House of Representatives, a bill that's going to be a standalone, or at least that's the plan, standalone for aid to Israel. The Senate side, your side of the Congress, some have said we'd rather have that combined with Ukraine. What's your view on that? My view is get the aid to Israel as quick as you can, and I'm not opposed to aid to Ukraine either. But I mean, it's just I understand why you'd want it standalone. But what's your sense of that?
No, I think the House has read it right. There's broad support in America, forgetting the radical stuff coming out of the White House, broad support in America to get this aid to Israel right now. We're watching this unfold on television. We want to see it come to an end. We want to see it come to an end quickly and get the Israelis the support they need to do the job that they know how to do.
Senator, we are working closely with hostage families. And in fact, next week we're going to be in Washington with those families, and we're working with your staff for you to be able to meet with some of them. These are representatives of the families that are hostages, mothers, fathers, brothers. I mean, this is the first time it'll be Israelis coming. This situation with the hostages has complicated a lot of what's going on in the Middle East right now, because Israel, there is a lot of pressure on Israel not to go into full tilt war here and rather, you know, give this kind of ceasefire to get this worked out and see if you can get the hostages out. That never tends to work. What's your sense of that on that front?
I'm completely sympathetic to the concern. I think this is also by design. This is why Hamas took the hostages.
Exactly.
I think Iran has, you know, demonstrated their control over Hamas and Hezbollah. Iran was the one that, Iran trained Hamas. They've armed them. They funded them. So I think this is part of the Iranian playbook, and the Biden administration has demonstrated they're willing to put a massive price on the heads of hostages. The $6 billion package that came through put a $1.2 billion price tag on the heads of every American. So we've incentivized the taking of hostages. We've therefore complicated immensely what the Israeli IDF has to do as they move in to try to free the hostages at the same time put Hamas out of business. But they've got to do both. And it's dangerous. It's complicated. And Hamas wanted to make it more dangerous and more complicated.
I know how serious you take it, how serious your team takes it, your staff. You were immediately on it, making sure Israel was going to get what it needed. These programs like the Iron Dome are joint programs that assist both Israel and U.S. troops on the battlefield. And we are just grateful to have you battling for the United States and for Israel, our ally, in the United States Senate, not just for Tennesseans, which we are, but for all Americans. Thank you for joining us, Senator Hagerty. It's such a busy time in our country.
Absolutely. Thank you.
You know, I mean, and Dad, I will tell you, I was with him that day. And first, of course, was just the shocking images we all saw. We were just couldn't believe what we were seeing, even though we've seen Islamic terror before, but at that level inside Israel. But the second thing I saw Senator Hagerty do, and not to give anything away secret, was get right on the phone and start working these situations. These are the kind of senators we work with on a daily basis, and this is why it's so important to support the work of the ACLJ. We're right there with them.
Okay, so we have launched our new Faith and Freedom Drive, and it just started yesterday. We had a great response, by the way. By the way, also, over 2,000 of you became ACLJ champions, actually 2,100 in the month of October. That was phenomenal. Here's what we want you to do. We know we're at an unbelievable moment in history. We know what's going on in Israel. Our team's fully engaged in Europe, here in the United States, in Washington, where we're going to be next week. We've sent already demands to the EU, congressional leaders, and the UN Security Council. We're meeting with the families next week in our offices. We'll be representing some of those before the United Nations. We continue to fight for your constitutional rights. Our lawyers are in court on the 14th Amendment Section 3 case involving President Trump being on the ballot. They're in court right now. Go to aclj.org/faithandfreedom and your gifts will be doubled. Do it today.
All right, welcome back to Secio. It's great to have Senator Hagerty. If you missed that, we'll have it clipped and posted for you on places like Rumble and wherever you watch our videos, Facebook as well, and Twitter and X later today. But I do want you to know, I just want to underscore that even when we're not talking about it on the air, we are with those kind of individuals. And sometimes you're just with them having a meeting and something like Israel happens and you're right in the mix with a U.S. senator or two or three of them that we actually were, and you're part of it, and you then get to continue to be part of it. And Dad, that takes us into the work that we're doing next week in Washington. We're able to do all of this and coordinate it because we have had so much great donor support over the past couple of months.
I'll tell you this. We are doing something that's unprecedented in ACLJ history. Yeah. We've never been able to do this situation like this. This is unique. Of course, this is a unique situation. We're going to have representatives from families of hostages in our offices, and our government affairs team is arranged, there'll be Israeli lawyers there as well, have arranged meetings with the House Republicans and House Democrats, Senate Republicans, Senate Democrats. We're going to have them on our broadcast on next Wednesday, live from Washington, D.C. So we're going to be able to bring you this kind of information, but we'll also tell you what we're doing. We are in the process of putting together a complaint to the United Nations. Now you say, well, who cares about the United Nations? Well, we know how corrupt it is, but you've got to be there. It's the Ministry of Presence. And it's going to put the UN in a bit of a vice. And C.C. Heil is working with our international team on that. We've gone to the European Parliament and got a successful resolution there. But right now, as we continue to fight for constitutional rights all over this country, we've got lawyers in Denver, Colorado, as we're sitting here, they're arguing at a jury trial, a judge bench trial in Colorado to make sure Donald Trump, and then it doesn't matter what you think of Donald Trump, but if he's the nominee, that he appears on the ballot. It's a 14th Amendment Section 3 challenge. And we've got that going on right now. We were requested yesterday, was it Michigan, Jordan?
Yes. Yeah,
the Michigan GOP has asked us to intervene in a case there. So we're working on that. We already have it in West Virginia and Virginia. Serious constitutional challenges. All of that's happening because of your support of the ACLJ. So we want you to support our Faith and Freedom Drive. Very important. They'll put it up on the screen for you. We need you now more than ever. The country needs you now more than ever. The same is true for the world. And of course, Israel needs you, but also for free and fair elections. You're needed. Go to aclj.org and have your gift doubled through the ACLJ's Faith and Freedom Drive today. And also, if you can make that gift, let's say you give, $50. If you could press monthly, recurring, you become an ACLJ champion, and that really, it almost like quadruples the impact of your gift. So it doesn't cost you more other than the monthly gift, but it does affect how we operate. So I would encourage you to do that at aclj.org, matching challenge for the Faith and Freedom Drive, but you can also make that a monthly gift and become an ACLJ champion. Andy Economo is in the studio with us. He has been working on these cases involving the 14th Amendment. We are in court in Colorado. I'm not too optimistic on how that court does. I'm very optimistic how we do it at the Supreme Court. But this is a huge challenge. And if Colorado were to get its way, an individual elected bureaucrat could remove a candidate from office with no oversight by a court.
That's exactly right, Jay. What we don't want is for the Secretary of State in Colorado to make the decision that unilaterally the Republican nominee, whoever that might be, and it might be Donald Trump again, is not permitted to be on the ballot. And the judge out there said that she was, quote, not prepared today. That was when she made the statement to reconcile the competing theories for how the First Amendment's free speech protections interplay with the 14th Amendment insurrectionist plan. But she said also that there's clearly a conflict. On the one hand, you have people in the 1800s who were disqualified for writing a letter to the editor. That's clearly speech. But now the law has developed. She said, you have a body of law holding that standards for finding incitement to insurrection are very high, and the speech needs to be very specific. So she realizes that she's got a balancing act that she has to perform.
Let me tell you know where this case is going. We win, great. I mean, I think we win at the Supreme Court of the United States. Jane Raskin, who is a special counsel to the American Center for Law and Justice and has, Jordan, quite a pedigree. I'm going to play some of her argument in just a moment. You want to go over that?
I want to tell people, too, because we've been telling you about this fundraising effort, how we always want to make sure at the ACLJ as we take on these matters, whether it's a 14th Amendment case like in Colorado. Of course, we've got a team of ACLJ attorneys. But if we need to ever bring in someone who is an expert, we don't want to have to think twice about the cost. We want to just be able to make the call and get them there. They want to do the work. We know who they are, and they want to be part of the team. And now she is a special counsel to the ACLJ. You may remember Jane. We worked with very closely and very publicly with the Mueller investigation. She worked for President Trump and our team. And she also was part of the team defending President Trump in the first impeachment trial. But she is a major white-collar criminal attorney. She's been inside the Department of Justice prosecuting mobsters in the 1980s. So she's been inside the DOJ as a prosecutor. She's been an assistant U.S. attorney as well. And when we said, you know, we need to be bringing the best of the best, even at the trial stage, because we know this is going to go up on appeal, so we have to have a great record. Let's get Jane out to Colorado. And we were able to do it, not having to think about the cost, because if so many of you signed up to be recurring donors, ACLJ champions, and because so many of you take part in these matching challenges. So we add to our team of experts who then work with our team that was already there to take them up at a level.
All right, we're going to go to the Colorado court. This is our special counsel, Jane Raskin, before the court.
As the Supreme Court has recognized, under our political system, a basic function of a political party is to select the candidates to be offered to the voters. Indeed, a party's ability to select its candidates implicates the First Amendment right to association. And Colorado law is entirely consistent with this. As the Supreme Court has...
We're going to play, let's get some more of that too for the days ahead. We're going to keep doing it. And there'll be more as it comes.
This just
gave you a little bit of a taste. So, Andy, it's also a vitally important case.
It's a very important case because it sets standards that are going to be looked at around the country. And we need to set up, as Jane Raskin is doing out there, I know Jane very well, a record upon which an appeal is going to be taken. Because as you said, Jay, and correctly noted, it isn't going to end with the state court in Colorado. This case is going to the Supreme Court of the United States. And we have a lawyer of Jane's constitutional proportions who is setting a record and creating a record for appellate purposes. And when appellate courts look down, they look at the record that you create in the trial court, and you've got to have a good lawyer establishing that record.
And she'll do it. She's doing a great job. And then I think I'll be arguing that in the Supreme Court, and probably within 6 months is my guess, maybe less. It could be 3 months because of the, if she rules against us, it could be an expedited review. It could be January. That's how fast this can move, folks. We could have that case and the West Virginia case and the Virginia case right there. That's why we need you as part of our faith and freedom drive that we're in right now. I want to encourage you to go to ACLJ.org/faith and freedom. As I said, the country needs you. We need you. The world needs you. Israel needs you. The election law integrity needs you to partner with us. So we've got the ACLJ Faith and Freedom Drive. Next week, we will have the major announcement as we expand our efforts. I've given you a little bit of taste of it on what we're going to be doing in Israel, folks. Few organizations have the capacity to do this. We have an office in Jerusalem. So your support here is critical.
Yes, and we've been going after Hamas just in the past couple of weeks in Europe through our European Center for Law and Justice that you've been supporting for decades. So for such a time as this, such an important time in the United States and Israel, support our work, donate, be part of the Faith and Freedom Drive. Double the impact of your donation. Go to ACLJ.org today. We're standing for your rights all over the world.
keeping you informed and engaged. Now, more than ever, this is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
All right, folks, we have breaking news. And this one needs explanation, so I'm glad we have that expertise. Our office in Israel, again, you support our work through this ACLJ Faith and Freedom Drive to continue to expand on all of this work and the expertise we have in this part of the world, whether it's the Middle East, Europe, here in the United States, where we've got people in court defending your rights so you can vote for the candidate of your choice in the upcoming primary. And we just showed you that. The U.S. just announced that it is trying to broker with Israel, who seems to be okay with it at this point, a brief, they're using the word brief cessation, so not a ceasefire, but a brief cessation of military operations in Gaza to allow for hostages to be released safely and humanitarian aid to get distributed. This would not mean that conflict would be over. What we and remember, Prime Minister Netanyahu actually agreed to this before, and two hostages were released. They halted some of the shelling, and they were released. They went right back to war. So it's not a ceasefire. There is some concern, though, Dad, because the last time they tried to broker one of these out of the UAE, Hamas demands were so high that it just didn't happen.
And it may be that you're setting the stage for them doing that again and saying, look what they're doing, so outrageous, nobody could do it. But it's interesting. White House officials have said that the request for the pause was far different from an overall ceasefire, which the Biden administration believes would benefit Hamas by allowing it to recover from Israel's intense bombardment. So they are talking about here a very narrow window of negotiating time. Now, we have done these negotiations for hostages. We have done these kind of negotiations in the Middle East, in Israel, dealing with hostile parties, including the Palestinian Authority. The timing of these, Andy, it's very quick. You've got to move. These are not weeks. These are hours.
Hours, literally hours. These pauses are designed or intended to be able to release humanitarian aid to be distributed through trucks to the shelters and to other people.
But also for hostage release.
And for hostage release. And it gives Hamas an opportunity to release the hostages. But again, as Jordan pointed out, we are not advocating a ceasefire.
Nor is the White House.
And the White House is not advocating that either.
We were able to get a family being held hostage in the Gaza Strip whose husband was killed, a Christian who ran the Bible Society there, when a war broke out in Gaza. And what I was told by the Israelis government was, keep your phone on 24 hours, then we're going to tell you when to get on the plane. While you're on the plane, make sure your Wi-Fi is on. You're going to tell her and her children when to show up at what crossing and at what time. They better be there then, regardless of what they're seeing on TV, regardless if Hamas is there. Then Hamas is going to open the gate. Don't talk to them. Just walk through the gate. There's going to be a car waiting for them on the other side in Israel. It's going to take them across the state of Israel and deliver them to their family in Bethlehem. And let me tell you something. We got the call in the middle of the night. We jumped on an airplane. We were texting. The moment we landed, she was walking. She called me. She literally had just walked across, gotten through that Gaza Strip point, through Hamas, opened the door. She went, got into the car. While she was on the way to the Palestinian Authority into Bethlehem, where her family lives and much more Christian Palestinians are, the war restarted already. Because remember, I was going through customs while on the phone with her, and you could see on the TV the shelling began. So these cessations are quick.
So we have uniquely, as Jordan just said, we have done this. So we know how important this is, which is the reason why, folks, we need the resources to get these 270 people out, as many as we can help. We were told today, we thought we were going to have 5-6 families. We told today we're up already maybe 20 or 30 that need our assistance. We need your help on this. We've got an ACLJ Faith and Freedom Drive. That's freedom in the United States. It's freedom in Israel. It's freedom around the globe. But we have got direct action. And like Jordan said, we have done it. We have negotiated and have used those short-term cessation of hostilities. It's not a ceasefire to get people out. Your support is critical. We encourage you to do it today. ACLJ.org/faith and freedom. Any amount you donate, we get a matching gift board. And folks, if you make it a monthly gift, you become an ACLJ champion. And almost 100 of you did that yesterday.
Folks, you ACLJ champions are taking us to the next level, folks, who are becoming those recurring donations. But even if you can only make the donation once, the country needs you. You know that. The world needs you. And Lord knows, the people of Israel, the land of Israel, need you as well. Go to ACLJ.org. Be part of our Life and Liberty Drive. Donate today. You know, a lot to talk about, and we are working on a lot of things we're not even talking about yet this week on the broadcast. We'll be able to tell you about more maybe tomorrow and next week. But there's some breaking news we just got to for a little bit here, and it's great to go over this because we've got a senior counsel with the ACLJ. You know him well as a former CAA director and former Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo. I can't think of a better guest to have right at this moment, right now when this news broke about these hostages, some of them American. We know it's
under dual citizens, right?
We're being told under 10 right now by the White House, but there's also many Europeans.
Well, there's also a report, just so you know, I was talking to the Israelis last night, that the number could be up to close to 300 by tomorrow. Oh, yeah, they're getting more of this. Mike, let me tell you, they just announced, or Anthony Blinken just announced, that they're going to urge the Israeli government to agree to a series of brief cessation of military operations in Gaza to allow for hostage release and humanitarian aid. They're saying this is not a ceasefire. Now, we have done, Jordan and I worked on one of these brief cessations of fire and getting hostages out of Gaza. The owner of the Palestinian Bible Society was murdered in broad daylight, stabbed 43 times by Hamas. We got his family and his kids out, and the Israelis worked out this, like, I mean, when I say brief, I think it was 15 minutes.
It was during Operation Cast Lead.
It was during Operation Cast Lead, and we got him out. The hostage situation is dramatic. We're now starting to represent a lot of these families. How you were the Secretary of State. What's the approach here that would be most successful?
Well, there's nothing wrong with directing fires away from a place you're trying to get your own people out. That's not problematic at all. It becomes damaging to the important work the Israelis are doing when you start to talk about ceasefires and, you know, days long pauses, allowing Hamas to rearm, refit, and resupply. But if Secretary Blinken has negotiated a solution that allow the Israelis to continue their important work, to still create space that is secure so that you can bring these hostages out, that's exactly the mission set. One of the reasons you put the pressure on Hamas, one of the reasons you challenge Iran, is so that you can get Americans out, that you can get Europeans out, you can get Israeli citizens and children, women and children, back to their families. So, look, I applaud this diplomatic effort, so long as it is truly aimed at stopping the fire only so long as it benefits getting our hostages out, precisely what the ACLJ has done such amazing work on, not only in this situation, but there's a long track record of you all, Jay, Jordan, doing this. And so, bless you for that.
Thank you, Secretary Pompeo. And again, thank you for all of your work. I want to talk to you about this because it is an issue, right? This seems like the kind of move, and Prime Minister Netanyahu and the Israeli government has been okay with this. This has already happened once, and two hostages were released. There was another hostage that was freed by the IDF, but then they went back again and tried to negotiate one of these and were unsuccessful because the demands from Hamas were just too high. Is there a way for the Muslim world, the Arab world, to go to Hamas and say, listen, you want to fight it out with Israel? That's up to you. But you've got to let these hostages out because you're losing the PR war ultimately to the whole world, to a European world that used to be, even looks like sometimes, even now when you see these protests, is on your side. But we all also know, Secretary Pompeo, you could see protests in the street. That's not usually a sign of the majority of the people. Majority of people all over the world never hit the streets in protest. Do you think the Muslim world can play a role to get Hamas to at least let these hostages out? And if they want to go back to war with Israel, they can go back to full-scale war with Israel.
Jordan, I'm counting on it. I pray that that's happening. I've heard reporting that is happening. I think it's true. Arab nations in Qatar, the Emiratis, they all understand. You can't hold 9-year-olds. You can't hold elderly women. This is indecent. You can't use them as human shields, nor can you use them as hostages to do battle with the country in the way that Hamas has. And so I am hopeful that they can see it's bad for Muslims. It's bad for the Arab world. They are duty bound to work to help find a pathway to get every one of these hostages back to their families. And then to your point about combatants, different deal altogether. We all know how this rolls. I'm confident that the Israelis can do what they need to do to protect their own nation. But we need the Arabs and the Gulf states working alongside of us both to take care of civilians where we can, to make sure that they get food and water that they need, but that this money doesn't go to Hamas, but at the same time, to make sure we get every innocent civilian out of Gaza, not just those that were detained, taken across the border, but all those that have been held hostage, not allowed to travel across the border opening at Rafah as well.
Another issue that is gigantic for us, and that is we are representing students, Jewish students, and pro-Zionist Christian students in college campuses, Rutgers University in particular, but others. Now, you've got a piece up at ACLJ dealing with this and the anti-Semitism. I never thought, Mr. Secretary, that I would live to see the kind of anti-Semitism I am seeing right this moment. And then to have the White House at the very pinnacle of this anti-Semitism, when they announced the arrest of the student that was harassing the Jewish students at Cornell that could not even go to their kosher dining facility, that have classes are being canceled and they're doing them by Zoom, that the administration would come out with their task force on Islamophobia. I see a lot of pro-Palestinian marches going on. I don't see very many pro-Israel ones, and I don't certainly don't see many pro-Israel student groups going out there. But the day they announce the arrest of the student that was harassing the Jewish students, the White House announces, we now have a task force on Islamophobia.
It is insane.
Yes.
It is tone deaf. It is illogical. You pick the descriptor. At this peak moment here in the United States, where we have seen not only, just uninformed, ignorant kids who are in college who have been brainwashed by their faculty, but those institutions that have an obligation to know better just fail in the most fundamental duty to protect every student on their campus, to watch Jewish students have to hide, to be fearful. I've seen it on campuses all across the country. And to then have the White House go out and say, gosh, the biggest problem we face today is Islamophobia, is among the most indecent things I have seen. And to see the vice president go out and make an announcement like this, she should be ashamed of herself. It is not only indecent, but dangerous as well. We know that the threat today isn't to young students on campus who are pro-Palestinian protesters. No one's truly organized threats against them. There are organized threats against those of us who believe in Israel, believe in Zionism, and especially to Jewish students on campus. Those institutions have a duty to protect them, and to watch our government fundamentally misunderstand the risk today on our campuses and all across America, I've not seen anything quite like that, even from an administration that I think has let us down in so many ways.
We all saw Secretary Pompeo after 9/11 that the majority of Americans did not blame Islam as a whole or Muslims as a whole for those terror attacks. They blamed Islamic extremism and the extremists within Islam. And Muslims came together with Christians and Jews, and President Bush put them together. People sometimes forget that. And though there are right moments for that. But there's articles being written right now by the left. My producer just put this in my chat. This is on Salon.com. So again, it's a liberal place. But you would think liberals wouldn't love Hamas. And the tagline for the article, MAGA and Christian nationalism, bigger threat to America than Hamas could ever be.
It's disgusting.
And they're talking about Mike Johnson, Speaker Johnson. But again, you're part of that MAGA world. They're saying we're a bigger threat than Hamas and their ideology could ever be to the United States.
Jay, you nailed it. It's disgusting. It's inaccurate. It harkens back to a different time, Jordan, Jay, that we never thought we'd go back to. There is a deeply rooted anti-Semitism buried in what they mask as progressivism. We knew that it sat there in pockets, but I didn't think the scale of what we have seen and these past weeks would ever emerge into public light, where you have people actually defending the barbaric activity that took place in Israel on October 7th of this year. Perhaps one of the few things that has come out about this is pulled the mask off of some of this leftist silliness. And I think many, many people who were beside them, who worked alongside them in important places in America, will see that these weren't true friends and allies. These weren't people who believed in the nation of Israel. It weren't people who believed in this rightful Jewish homeland.
Nope.
Sadly, you're seeing those in government fail to do the right thing, to call this out in the right way as well. I put Salon in a bucket along with other anti-Semitic outfits in America. who just fundamentally misunderstand the peace-loving nature of the Jewish people who live in Israel and Zionists all across the world, right. Even those of us who are Christian Zionists exactly. as well.
Exactly. Mike, we appreciate it so much, and thanks for being part of our team, and thanks for your insight, and thanks for your help on this project. I got to tell you something, folks. We have people like Mike Pompeo because of your support of the ACLJ, and we're in our Faith and Freedom Drive, and I don't know what else I could tell you other than it speaks for itself. Look what we're able to accomplish with your support for the ACLJ. Your donations, of course, this month are doubled in our Faith and Freedom Drive. We'd also ask you if you're able to make that gift that you give this month a recurring gift so you become an ACLJ champion, because that over time really increases our budget. We have Jane Raskin, Mike Pompeo, Rick Rennell, Tulsi Gabbard, and our lawyers and expertise. ACLJ.org/faith and freedom.
Secular. We are taking your calls to 1-800-684-3110. There's a lot to talk about, obviously, and this is situations that are moving very quickly, and it's awesome that we have these experts, members of Congress who we're very close with, to come on the air, and they can pivot as necessary because they are living this every moment right now. Both our domestic issues we're facing here in the U.S. And this new threat of terrorism that we were told about yesterday by our FBI director, and then today we're told, you know, but yeah, there's that huge threat of terrorism, especially against Jews in America by basically every hate group in America. But the council we're going to announce today is the Islamophobia Council, because this is a time when Americans are really thinking about, it's Muslims who seem like they're under attack, when instead radical extremists, some of them not even Muslims, just liberal college kids, are protesting for, you know, free Palestine, kill the Jews in the streets. I don't see a lot of anti-Palestinian protests where anybody is using violent language, no. And especially not any general anti-Muslim protest, because that would be wrong. Most Muslims, like Mike Pompeo said, this is embarrassing. Hamas is embarrassing if you're the UAE. If you're Qatar and you've tried to kind of keep them in a box, yeah. Which they have, you know, and you just hosted the World Cup, this is embarrassing. Because people think, you know what, maybe I shouldn't host the World Cup, or maybe I'm not going to put my business in the UAE. Maybe I'm not going to make that trip overseas or build that school or that hospital. I mean, we've seen all that U.S. business go back. But the UAE yesterday wanted to make very clear that even though they don't love all of this going on, they wish the Palestinian civilians didn't have to face this, they still believe that the Abraham Accords, even though the Biden administration doesn't talk about it, are good as between Israel and the UAE.
Yeah, exactly. So you do have these Arab countries that are not thrilled at all with what's going on here. They're not in lockstep. All right, we're going to go to the phones. We said we would. Mary Ellen's calling from Illinois on line one. Mary Ellen, you're on the air.
Oh, hello, and thanks for everything. We do pray for you.
Thank you.
But this Islamophobia, I just think it's a White House deflection
yep.
of the real issue, which is anti-Semitism. And I had seen that the House did not pass the censure against Tlaib, and it's like my friend's congressperson, Harriet Hageman, told her that, well, she voted for free speech, so how do we balance anti-Semitism and free speech here?
Yeah, and the reason it lost, it went down, it was not because of Democrats primarily. We knew they weren't going to support that, even the ones that don't like what she says because of free speech. There was a line in there, and I'm not defending. And again, I'm not sure. I would have had to read the whole thing to decide how I would have voted. I probably would have voted to censure just because I can't stand it, honestly. But, and I think she does actually promote violent rhetoric. But there were some, about 10 or so Republicans who said the censure went too far because it said that she had called for an insurrection. And what they had said was, listen, we're starting to throw that term around way too much
yep.
in the United States. And they would have supported a censure, but for the fact that if she's caused an insurrection, she wouldn't just be censured. She should technically be taken out of Congress.
You have the speech and debate clause element of it, so it's complicated legally.
So I think if that line was out,
yeah, probably would have gone.
It would have gone through. Maybe that will be done in the future.
We'll see.
But you know what the truth is? Her voters are going to keep putting her there.
100%.
Let's keep using her to expose that world.
Yep. Linda's calling from South Carolina on line two. Hi, Linda. You're on the air.
Yes. I just want to say that I am in full support of Netanyahu's refusal to do a ceasefire, and I'm really concerned about the United States' laxity in supporting Israel. I'm really very concerned about that. I think we need to be Israel's greatest ally.
Yep. I agree with you. I think the Netanyahu government's barely hanging on right now, which is what happens in these kind of situations. And there, one other complicated, they are operating under what they call a war council. So you've got a unity government form. In fact, we're going to probably hear from next week. The former Israeli prime minister will be on our broadcast, Naftali Bennett.
Yeah, I was going to talk to you about this, Deb, because one issue that we're working on, we haven't started telling people yet about next week in Washington, is exactly that. It's keeping the Biden administration. We're not going to like everything they say. We're not going to like Kamala Harris saying about the Islamophobia. We're not going to like some of the things they say about the Israelis and right. how they conduct themselves. But so far, they have said, no ceasefires.
Right.
And we want to keep them there. And what we're going to do is continue to put people forward to make sure that they understand why a ceasefire cannot go into place. The U.S. is the last line of defense for Israel at the U.N. Security Council.
That's correct. That's why you got to be there, by
every
the
other
way.
Country's turned.
That's almost. Why you got to be there. So people say, oh, you shouldn't be there. Well, except you can veto. Okay, we are the last line of defense. So we've set demand letters in, demand position papers in. We are, it looks like, and we'll be able to announce this next week, we may well be representing upwards of 20, 30 families to go before the United Nations to advocate under a committee of the United Nations that's dealt with these takings. They call them disappearance, which is hostage taking. They're very complicated, but Jordan and I have done these cessation of hostilities.
Individuals at the UN before, they trust our work.
Yeah, we have good relations with the UN people, actually, because we've had success. So we're going to deploy that. Now, that we can't give you a lot of information about that today and tomorrow. We will be giving you a lot of information about that next week. I'll be broadcasting out of Washington next week. But folks, this is why. I mean, you've seen it today. Senator Hagerty, Mike Pompeo. These are the people we're dealing with. Jane Raskin and her team of ACLJ lawyers.
I remind people that it's not just Israel, but we're covering so many issues at one time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've got lawyers, like I said, and Jane Raskin and Nathan Garrett are out in right now in Colorado. We got five lawyers at the ACLJ defending the right for the Republican Party to put the candidate of their choice on the ballot. And we've got this in four other states that we're litigating right now. It's going to go to the Supreme Court. So we're handling the Israel stuff. We're handling those. We've got school matters we're handling for students. One at Rutgers University. That letter, I think, goes out today, that demand. So there's a lot going on.
And the European Center for Law and Justice did a great is really job taking last week. It to those European countries and putting that pressure
did
on
a
them
heck of a job last
as
week.
They were able to do to get the Council of Europe to designate Hamas finally as a terrorist organization, which means no more money
Huge.
From the Council of Europe. Interestingly, the U.S. might be sending money to Hamas, but not the Council of Europe under that European organ. And we're kind of taking each European organ step by step. That's, again, you sometimes ask, why is that office in Strasbourg? Why are you in France? What is so important there? And you think about, again, that French team, and it's an international team. They're not all French, but they're able to interact in a way that Americans can't. At institutions, just the way the dialogue, the relationships, they live in a different part of the world. They also experience it differently because of the waves of Islamic immigration they've seen in their own countries. And remember, they experienced unbelievable amounts of terrorist attacks
right.
under ISIS. So when they see Hamas become more like an ISIS, like we've all said, we know, Dad, this is a time that we have to double down our work at the ACLJ and make sure this does not spread to the United States of America, where we have, and again, this open border. And we talked about the people yesterday who were running it from the Middle East, were Palestinian spokespeople. This is the time to fight back, and you can do it with us, folks.
We are continuing our fight for constitutional freedoms in our country here in the United States. We're fighting around the world. We're in court today fighting for America's voting rights. We are working with our global affiliates to defend Israel at international tribunals. All of that is happening at the same time. In order to meet these unprecedented demands of really historical proportions, we've never seen anything like it. We've launched our Faith and Freedom Drives. Your gifts will be doubled dollar for dollar. We need you. The country needs you. Israel needs you. And we need you here at the ACLJ. Go to aclj.org
/faithandfreedom. Make a donation. We'll get a match. And if you can make that donation monthly, you become an ACLJ champion.